Well, hello from Galesburg, Illinois. Thank you all for joining us on tonight's phonecast for parents of prospective students who have already been admitted to Knox or who are considering Knox for the fall. I'm Paul Stinas. I'm the Vice President for Enrollment and the Dean of Admission. I'm the person who signs the letter that offers your son or daughter admission to Knox College. We look forward to hearing from parents across the country tonight. If you'd like to ask a question, simply press, at any point in time, press *3 on your keypad. It's like raising your hand. It won't interrupt us, but it will let us know that you have a question. Today marks the first in a series of events that are part of our admitted student experience. Throughout the winter and spring, the Office of Admission will host a series of live, on-campus, and virtual events with faculty, staff, and current students. And you can learn more about those opportunities on our website. We also happen to be just a few days away from our regular decision application deadline, which is January 15th. So if your student hasn't yet applied to Knox, there's still time to submit an application. They can apply using the Common Application, the Coalition Application, or the Knox Application for admission. Again, more information about applying for admission is on our website. So once again, if you have a question at any time during the phonecast, feel free to go ahead and press *3 on your keypad. As you're formulating and submitting your questions, I'd like to go ahead and ask our president, Teresa Mott, to say a few words of welcome. Teresa?
Thank you, Paul, and welcome to everyone joining us tonight. I'm sorry that we can't be together for this event, but I do want to thank you for taking the time for this call. I hope that you and your families are all safe and healthy in this very difficult time. This is my 10th year as the president of Knox College, and over that time, I've certainly come to understand that choosing the right college for your student is one of the most important decisions your family will make, and that doing so in these particular times is very stressful. So tonight, we're here to help. That's our purpose. That's our goal for the evening. I know that your student can earn a degree at thousands of colleges and universities, but you're on this call tonight because you want your student to achieve something bigger and more ambitious than just a degree. You want them to get an education that prepares them for a successful career of meaningful work, for competitive graduate programs. Hang on a second, I just had a glitch on my phone. Apologies to everyone for that. One moment. One moment here. Sorry about that. Don't you love technology? So you are hoping that your student will get an education that will prepare them for this successful career of meaningful work, for competitive graduate programs, and for a life of leadership and purpose in a changing world. And in these times, I cannot help but think that the world needs Knox graduates more than ever before. This COVID pandemic has touched every field of human inquiry: biology, economics, sociology, statistics, psychology, political science, law, medicine, and ethics. And Knox graduates are out there addressing these issues using their special education. Every day, a Knox graduate on the front lines of this pandemic fights to save a life. Every day, a Knox graduate who is a teacher or a school counselor seeks to keep students learning in this very different remote environment. Every day, a Knox graduate works in a laboratory of diverse individuals with one singular goal: to find a treatment or a vaccine. And every day, a Knox graduate who is a parent becomes a social studies, math, science, and language arts teacher for their stay-at-home children. And we have been collecting some of those stories from our alumni. They are very inspirational, and they remind me that here at Knox, we educate students for the 21st century by preparing them for a future that we may not even be able to anticipate at this point. We focus on nurturing the human skills: critical thinking, creativity, emotional intelligence, and curiosity. Our faculty, our staff, our coaches engage directly with students in and out of the classroom, one-on-one. And our students put their knowledge to the test in hands-on applications and real-world situations. They live and learn in a very diverse community, with others whose lives and stories are vastly different from their own. As we say, NOSS provides a human-powered education, one that is uniquely suited for success in a rapidly evolving world, and one that prepares graduates to find success no matter what the future brings. I hope your student will join our community and will contribute to a better world, more healthy, more equitable, and more just. Thank you again for joining us tonight. I look forward to your questions. Back to you, Paul.
Thanks so much, Teresa. I do see that we have a number of our callers who are asking questions. But before we begin to answer those questions, I would like to ask our other colleagues on this call to go ahead and introduce themselves and explain their role here at Knox. So I'd like to go ahead and start with you, Mike.
Thank you, Paul, and good evening, everyone. My name is Michael Schneider. I am provost and dean of the college and also a longtime faculty member at Knox. I'm a historian by training with a specialist in specialty in East Asian history. As provost and dean of the college, I'm responsible for the academic program, so all the courses, all the academic support services, and the library, the registrar, and all of those features of the student educational experience. Anne?
Good evening, everybody. I'm Anne Ehrlich. I am the Vice President for Student Development, and that means that I'm responsible for most of what happens outside of the classroom: housing, health and counseling, intercultural life, the Career Center, and many other offices that support the academic mission of the college. Daniela?
Good evening. My name is Daniela Earle. I am the Director of Athletics here at Knox College. I also have oversight of our club sports programming, our intramural programming, and I also coordinate our academic wing, which is our sports studies department. Tonette?
Hello, my name is Tonette Salazar. I'm the parent of a junior at Knox, Joseph Salazar, who is a political science and business major and also is a member of the baseball team at Knox. We are from Denver, Colorado, and look forward to some of the questions we'll have tonight.
Hi, everyone. My name is Oluwa Bamishi Afolabi. I'm a current student at Knox. I'm a senior. I'm an international student from Nigeria. I'm a biology major and a psychology minor. I'm on the premier track, and I'm here as a current student, and I'm also the student senate president of the school. So I'm excited to be here and, you know, talk to people. Thank you. Back to you, Paul.
So those are some of the panelists who are available to talk with you tonight. We're certainly eager to hear from you, eager to talk with you. As a reminder, you can press *3 now or at any point during this conversation to let us know that you have a question. We do have some questions that were submitted in advance, and I thought I might go ahead and start with one of those questions. We received a question in advance from Julie in Washington, and the question is, are you considering or will you be providing any extra mental health, social, or emotional support for new students who might not have had any in-person classes for over a year now? My daughter's high school is most likely not returning to in-person instruction this year. I'm wondering how she will fare with such a big transition to college, especially after being at home for so long. Anne, do you want to speak to that to start us off?
Sure, I'd be happy to. That's such a great question. While it's too early to have the specifics laid out, I think it's a given that new student orientation is going to look different this fall. Orientation is all about helping students transition effectively from one culture to another, and the pandemic culture is clearly quite different than anything we've seen before. We're learning a lot this year about what it's like to do school remotely. It's hard on all of us. I wish I were sitting in the admissions office right now on campus with my colleagues and not in my home office. So we all have a lot of empathy for what your students are experiencing and are so excited about the prospect to returning to truly in-person learning, but also acknowledge the strain that this year has taken. So, for example, we have orientation sessions about the difference between being in a high school classroom and being in a college classroom, and that's still critical content. But those sessions are now also going to have to address refamiliarizing students with the in-person classroom dynamic. Our counselors do sessions about mental health. Those sessions are going to look a little bit different now, acknowledging the additional layers of anxiety brought on by the pandemic and by having these additional layers of transition into NOCs. I will say we're in the midst of one of my favorite times of year, which is selecting our student resident advisors and orientation leaders for next year, those key returning students that will mentor your incoming students and play a key role in their transition from a peer perspective. So we'll be looking for students who are especially empathetic to what your students are currently experiencing, and I suspect that won't be hard to find. As I said, the whole NOCS community is feeling the social and emotional effects of the pandemic, and we're really looking forward to being able to come together and support one another in person again in an even more meaningful way than before.
All right. Did anybody else want to address that question?
Sure. This is Taudette. I will address it from a parent perspective. I think that any transition, pandemic or not, is a big transition for a student. And so what I really felt about Knox when my son was trying to decide whether to go to Knox or another institution was the fact that Knox really cared about my child. And that was important to me, because I didn't want him just to become a number and get lost in the shuffle. I wanted him to feel like he had a great sense of belonging. And I have to say that in his first 2.5 years with Knox, that feeling has not changed. And what Knox has done for students, whether it was a polar vortex or a pandemic or anything else, is they always keep the students first and foremost in mind. And they're very intentional in providing support services, activities, outreach, for students to get that support and that connection. I have a child who's a little reserved, and I was worried that he would stay in his room and not engage. And I was pleasantly surprised to see that that wasn't even an option in his mind. And even with all the time at home, he is anxious to get back to the Knox community, where he feels like that is where he belongs and where he wants to be. And so from a parent perspective, I can assure you that it is a big transition, but it is a great transition, and Knox is there every step of the way to provide students what they need.
Thank you. I actually have another question related to the pandemic and how we're managing that, and I have a call from Richard, who's live on the line at this point. Richard?
Yes, hi. So my wife and I were wondering, how are you guys conducting classes during the pandemic? Do you expect that to change by the fall? What do you expect the dormitory situation to be like in the fall, if that would still be affected by the pandemic, or what kind of plans you have for that? And finally, do you have a plan for either providing or requiring vaccination of students before they come to campus in the fall?
Mike, do you want to start by talking about our plans academically?
Sure, Paul, and thank you, Richard, for a great question. And one of the reasons it's such a great question is Knox faculty love teaching, and maybe even more than that, they love talking about teaching, which means we have approached this pandemic quite resourcefully, but with a lot of expertise and experience with rethinking and reshaping the classroom. So at this point, 10 months, 11 months into this pandemic, we've had experience with completely remote teaching. We've had experience with hybrid teaching, in-person classes. And then currently we're having the experience where we're starting remotely and then we're coming back to campus. I say this because I think the best answer to your question is we will be flexible and adaptable to provide the best education in the liberal arts college mode that we can, given whatever the prevailing health condition is at the time. So thinking about your question and the earlier question about the transition to campus, we're gonna be thinking long and hard about exactly what our health experience will be on campus, how we can deliver the in-person experience, especially for first year students, that provides real early engagement and connection with the institution. So I think that level of resourcefulness and flexibility has come to kind of envelop all that we do here at Knox. And 10 months into it, I'm quite confident that we'll be able to turn to face whatever the challenges are of the moment. I will turn it over to Anne, perhaps, to discuss the issue of vaccines and the approach to campus.
Sure. I've been so delighted with how our campus community has handled the pandemic. I was optimistic going into the fall, but how it went far exceeded my expectations, and everybody really rose to the occasion in terms of abiding by all our health and wellness policies and behaving in a way that promotes the safety of our campus community. In terms of housing, we are operating at full capacity for housing. We have this year accommodated as many students who wanted single rooms as possible. I suspect that's something that we will continue into the fall. In terms of the vaccine will be, we require a number of immunizations on campus already, measles, mumps, rubella, meningitis, because it's the right thing to do and because it's also a state requirement. We will roll the COVID immunization into that policy. And that means that it will be required of all students, but there will be an opportunity to opt out of it if a student has a compelling religious or medical or other reason. The vaccine is not available for purchase by private entities like a college, so we can't actually obtain the vaccine itself and administer it to students, but we have very close relationships with our local health department and our two hospitals in Galesburg. Our campus medical director is actually the physician at one of the hospitals in Galesburg that is overseeing the rollout of the vaccine. So I have no doubt that we will be able to provide students with access to that in a seamless way if they are not able to obtain it at home prior to coming to Knox.
Okay, thank you, Mike and Ann. The next question has to do with the way in which the pandemic has affected colleges financially. Robert, I'd like to go ahead and take you live so you can ask your question. Go ahead,
okay.
Robert.
Thank you. We've been reading that some liberal arts colleges are being hurt financially by the COVID pandemic. For example, Ohio Wesleyan is reducing the number of majors offered and the size of its faculty. Are there any plans at Knox to reduce the number of majors or faculty size?
Mike, you want to start us off?
Sure.
Mike, do you want that, or do you want me to do it?
Well, you want to go ahead, Teresa?
Yeah, why don't I? It's such an important question. We can both, I think, weigh in on it. I would say that we are fortunate among small colleges. We have a strong endowment. And we've been quite prudent over decades in not taking on excessive debt. So when you look at the schools that are really facing significant difficulties, they are often much smaller than Knox, their endowments are inadequate, and they have at some time in the past taken on debt that burdens them. None of those things are true for us. We also have had really extraordinary alumni giving in response to the pressures of the pandemic and of the demographics. Just this last year, for example, we had one day in which over $1.5 million was donated just in 24 hours from alumni. And much of that has been used to help the college address our pandemic-related costs that weren't covered by any government dollars. I think that combination of endowment support and strong alumni support are really important for us and are part of that Knox story. I think on the curriculum, I'm going to turn it over to Mike, just to say that at all liberal arts colleges, curricula are always evolving. New majors are added. Old majors are sometimes retired when student demand moves on to something else. So we have not eliminated academic programs. But we do recognize over time that as student interests change, we need to be responsive to that so that we can provide the academic opportunities our students are seeking. Mike, if you want to talk a little bit more about this, I'll turn it over to you.
Yes, Teresa, thank you. And I think my answer would be along those same lines. In my position, my goal is always to be tweaking and shaping the academic program. The strong financial base of the institution means that we don't necessarily have to take radical steps, but it's also the case that we have a student-faculty ratio of 12 to 1 that we abide by, that we aim to use effectively to support our academic programs. And that involves, you know, moving positions around, reallocating them from some areas to others, because as already indicated by some of the discussion here, this pandemic is pointing in new directions that will lead student interest in pre-health, in public policy. And so we'll be shifting and tailoring more than we will simply be ruthlessly cutting. On a daily basis, I don't see any savings to be gained by cutting a major so much as we think of, okay, how can this major be redesigned or reshaped to support where student interests are headed in the 21st century?
All right, well, thank you. Mandy has a question about the sorts of support services that we have in place for students. Mandy, you want to go ahead and ask your question?
Sure. Hi, I wanted to find out how college students would seek out supports if they have any special needs, and in particular for any kind of autistic spectrum disorder supports.
Excellent question. Thank you. Go ahead.
This is Tanat. As a parent, I can answer from a parent perspective. My son has ADHD, and I have found that the Office of Disability Support Services at Knox is incredible. They reached out to my son before he even got on campus, coordinated a meeting with him once he got to campus, sat down with him to ask what type of accommodations did he need, whether you have a 504 or an IEP, or even some private schools don't require that and just need to know the accommodations. They really went out of their way to make sure he had everything that he needed. And I appreciated that because oftentimes our students won't advocate for themselves. And so just knowing that Knox was keeping an eye on it and provided exactly what he needed and checked in with him to make sure that he didn't need adjustments given that the college environment is different was something that I really appreciated. So that is, I can answer that from the parent perspective.
Hi, this is Mike Schneider. Just speaking, looking at this question from an administrative perspective. So the Office of Disability Support Services reports to me as provost of the college, and I guess I'll say I'm greatly relieved, Tonette, that the system worked as it's supposed to. That is to say, we reach out to students. And the thing I would add to Tonette's description is that we engage, in a sense, behind the scenes in a lot of conversations and communication so that, for example, academic advisors understand and have conversations with students about their experiences in the classroom. That there are connections to the Center for Teaching and Learning, which is our main source for tutoring work, and other academic support offices, so that there's communication when there's, for example, an academic accommodation for a particular class, or just where a student is able to express his or her concerns in terms of accessing academic resources. And I think, again, as Tonette said, our goal has to be to not just expect that students will naturally know what they want and need, but that we have to be kind of exploring that with every student. So that sort of communication and education among ourselves for in terms of neurodiversity and an educational opportunity for all of our students is an ongoing conversation on our campus. So yes, there is a kind of an entry point, but we want to engage or enmesh these students in a lot of other conversations with academic advisors, with their individual instructors in classes, so that there's full lines of communication that are open at every stage. But thank you for that question.
One of the things that we're able to do during the call is to have a couple of polls during the course of our phone cast tonight. And I'd like to go ahead and ask our first poll question. So if you want to have your keypad available on your phone, you can respond to the poll via your keypad. So the first poll question is, if you or your student have already visited campus in person, you've already made an in-person visit to the campus, go ahead and press 1. If you're planning to do an in-person visit, go ahead and press 2. And if you haven't visited in person and you don't plan to be able to make an in-person visit before you make a final college decision, please press 3. So if you already visited, press 1. If you're planning to visit in person, press 2. And if you haven't visited but don't expect that you'll be able to, press 3. And we'll have the results of that poll shortly. While we're waiting for the results of the poll, we have questions from Catherine, who is interested in where our students come from and how do they get here, among other things. Catherine, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. We are from Denver, Colorado, or Boulder, Colorado. So I was just curious as to how many of your students are from in-state. Are there any from out here in the West? And then more specifically, obviously my son would be flying to get to school. What's the transportation like from whatever airport you recommend them flying into to the school itself? Is there a shuttle system? Do they need to have a car? Do they take public transportation? How does that work for most students there?
I will start by saying myself that as the dean of admission, that about half of our students come from within the state of Illinois. Just under half come from within the state of Illinois. The others come from any one of 50 states and about 50 countries. In fact, almost 1 in 5 of our students come from outside the United States. And when you get outside of Illinois, Colorado is actually, Colorado and California are typically our two most represented states. So we can certainly ask panelists at this point what the best way is to get to campus and answer your other questions. Anyone want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, this is Anne. I can jump in on the transportation question because our office actually does run the shuttle. There's two airports that are equidistant to campus. They're great. They're small little airports, so they're really easy to get in and out of. Peoria and the Quad Cities are both about an hour from campus, and we run a shuttle all day long on the day before classes start each term, and then on the day the residence halls close each term. So that's something that would be available to your student. If they need a different transportation on a different day, we can also help facilitate that.
Thank you. Great. This is Tenet. Happy to chime in. What I would recommend, and I'm happy to talk offline about how to get to and from Colorado, but look at where flights run from wherever you are located, because some will fly into Peoria, some fly into Moline, some go into Chicago. I know there's a lot of students that will take the train between Galesburg and Chicago. My recommendation is to take the earliest train possible because sometimes there are delays. But the shuttle service has worked great. My son has used that. He actually missed his shuttle on his way home his freshman year from Thanksgiving because he slept through his alarm. So things will happen, but he did make it home for Thanksgiving. Then there's, if you happen to be from Colorado, there's an Amtrak that runs from the station in Galesburg to right to Denver overnight. And so I actually just took that when I moved him back to school. And so there's various options. There's also a lot of students who live near your child. And so there's carpools. And what I've really found is the Knox community goes above and beyond to help each other get where they need to be. There's a parent Facebook page, and there's been different pleas on there to say, you know, my daughter is stuck and can't get from Chicago. Is there anyone that can help her out? We've had families step up and say she can stay the night with us, or I know somebody who's, here's my daughter's number, get in touch with her. She can give her a ride. And so there's always opportunities if one of the ones that presents itself first doesn't seem to work out for you. And so whether you fly, whether you drive, whether you take the train, Galesburg seems to be kind of in the middle with not and a lot of easy options around it. But ironically, it's not that hard to get to.
All right. Well, thank you. We have a call from Ted, who is interested in hearing more about the experience of student athletes at Knox. Ted?
Hello, thank you. Yeah, I was interested, my son may be interested in participating in the baseball program, and since one of your panelists, Tanette, I believe, has a son who is also a baseball player, I was interested in hearing a little bit about that, her experience, and how that has gone, and opportunities you've seen that he's had participate in the first 2 years. I think he's a junior right now. And also just generally how that process works for the sports programs at Knox for actual NCAA level participation as opposed to club or other things like that.
Daniela?
Hi, Ted. This is Daniela. I'm the athletic director. I'll let Tonette address the parent perspective, but we offer a pretty wide range of experiences for our students. You know, as you know, we're of the D3 philosophy mindset, so we're interested in providing a very holistic experience. We think that we teach some pretty good skills through sport that translate very well out into the working world or into graduate school. I feel like all of our coaches are committed to helping young men and women be the best version of themselves that they can be. So I'll let Tonette, maybe you can address, since he's a baseball parent, specifically your experience with baseball.
Sure, I'd be happy to, and I don't mean for this to turn into the Tonette show, but I'm happy to provide some insight. What Daniela mentioned is one of the things that I think my son loves the most is that it is Division III, and so athletes who play baseball or any other sport are doing it truly because they love the sport and they want to continue their career in that sport. My son has found it to be very manageable, balancing a sport versus academics and everything else that he does. He's in a fraternity, he's a tour guide, he is an athletic trainer, and then he does some other volunteer service. And so I know in a lot of Division I programs, it becomes the student's job. And so I think that's what I appreciate and what my son appreciates is that there's room for balance and room for other things. By playing a sport when he first came into the college, it did give him an automatic friend group. They had a large number of the freshman baseball players kind of rooming together. And so they felt a little bit like a litter of puppies who traveled together because they were doing everything together. But that really helped give them some friend groups that they could relate to right away. And they instantly stepped up to kind of help each other out. There's a lot of mentoring that goes on between the athletes on the sports teams who have similar majors. When they have practice, class is the top priority. So if you have to miss a practice for class, it is not an issue with the coaches because you are there to receive your education first. As far as a parent, how do I feel? We've spent years attending every athletic event. And so it is a little hard as a parent not to be able to be there all the time. But what I have found is there's a number of ways to still feel connected. Oftentimes they try to do some streaming of the games, and it's not like it's, you know, ESPN. Sometimes it's a camera zip tied to the back of the backstop, but my son happens to be a catcher, so I can still see him and I can still see what's going on. Other times they have scoring, live scoring with Game Changer, so you can kind of watch what's happening on your phone as they score it. But there's also parents who are more local, and they will take pictures, they will send updates. When they play games with other universities, they stream it live. And one of the most entertaining parts is the student commentary that goes along with that because they fashion themselves as sideline reporters. But so you do feel that connection that's still there and the link to the sport. There's a lot of support among the sports as well too. For example, my son commentates for the men's and women's soccer games, and he is equally as excited about soccer as he is about his own sport for baseball, and they in turn support him. And so that camaraderie among the athletes is really there. And between fall practice and winter and spring, they all kind of cross paths there.
Great, thank you. I do have the results of our first poll tonight, which had to do with campus visit plans. We had about 180 people respond to the poll, 30% of whom have already visited campus. So about a third of you, almost a third of you have already visited campus. 41% are planning to visit campus before making a decision. And about 29% of you are anticipating making a decision without making an in-person visit to the campus. So thanks for that. Our next question comes from Joseph, who has some questions with regard to speech on campus, space for discussions, opinions, et cetera. Joseph?
Hi, yes. I wanted to know if you have a similar speech code to the University of Chicago's, where they value rigorous inquiry and open discourse on different topics. I've had a couple of alumni that are from Knox, and one of the things I admired about them is that their ability to critically think about different ideas, different topics, and I wanted to know, it's one of the reasons I wanted to know if the value of a liberal arts education, and so I want to know what your stances are on that.
All right, thank you.
I can jump in on that, and then I think Mike can as well. We don't have a policy that is as elaborate as the University of Chicago. We are a small institution that does one thing, which is undergraduate education. And, of course, the University of Chicago is a much more diverse graduate institution, a research institution as well. We do have a policy on academic freedom, and we have a policy that seeks to make the campus a place where discussions and different views can be articulated. That said, and I will be candid, the larger climate in the country is one in which speech is sometimes fraught, right? It is sometimes difficult for people to hear ideas that are threatening to them or different from their own. And I always tell students when they first come that they will learn the most from the people who are the least like them. But that is a hard thing to do if you can't listen to them. So we are striving in a climate in which it's very it's a harsh climate, and it's hard to hear ideas with which you vehemently disagree. But it is our goal. Our faculty work towards that in their classes, and we work in our student services and our student development programs to help students build their skills of defending their perspectives, but also being open and listening to others. I don't know if anyone wants to jump in on this one, but I can at least explain, you know, relative to University of Chicago.
Can I add a student perspective? This is Bamishe. And one of the things that I've come to really appreciate about Knox is how the school gives us the opportunity as individuals to explore our identities, to ask, you know, these important questions, and really, you know, get a feel for the definition of the word for ourselves, you know, beyond what we've been taught, you know, growing up, beyond those things that we've seen, just for us to really get a definition for the word, have the experience for ourselves, you know, what, you know, these things, what they mean for us. I really appreciate that about the school. And so when you come to campus, whatever school of thought that you belong to, you actually get to meet people that actually, you know, that have similar perspectives with you. And so while the school encourages us to, you know, move out of your comfort zone, ask questions, be critical, you know, be open to all of these ideas, if there's any point where you're getting uncomfortable with, you know, exploring, you always have people that you can always trust, you know, people that you can deem fit as your circle of influence that you can always retreat back to, and they will help you. And, you know, we have the Hope Center, which is the home of Peace and Equity. And, you know, they try to facilitate conversations. You know, every year we have the Day of Dialogue. We don't have classes that day, and we come together as the campus to have conversations around area of diversity, inclusion, equity, you know, have conversations about current events and how that affects us and, you know, our part in all of these things. So yes, the school does give us that opportunity. And I think in all of these things, the school also encourages us that you need to be sensitive and empathetic. You know, yes, you're learning about yourself. Yes, you're learning about all of these things, but at the same time, you don't want to learn while you're, you know, discriminating against other people or people that have a different perspective from you. So the school gives us that opportunity and at the same time tries to create that balance for us to be empathetic while we grow in the community.
Okay, thank you. The next question is from Patricia, who's interested in learning more about experiential learning at Knox and the Power of Experience grant.
Oh, I guess I have to actually talk.
Yep.
Sorry.
go ahead, Patricia.
Sorry. This is Patricia. I'm from Aurora, just outside of Chicago, and also have a baseball player who is very interested in Knox. We were very impressed at the when we visited. One of the things that I thought was very cool was the idea of having a experience, like a real-world experience project of some sort that would kind of engage the student, and that there was a grant that was available to the student. So if they wanted to pursue a research project of some sort, or I'm not sure, maybe travel, I just needed, I guess, a few more details about how this Power of Experience would work. Is it a requirement to graduate? Is it a two-year long endeavor? Or just maybe some specifics about that.
Mike, do you want to start us off?
I can speak to that.
Bamashe, go ahead. Go ahead.
So I, as a student, I just used my Power of Experience grant this summer. And I used it for a research project with one of my professors. I'm a biology major, so my research was in the area of biology. And the power of it, the grant helped me fund my stay on campus. And actually, Power of Experience is just one of the grants that students can apply for whatever research project that they're interested in. I know some people, they had internships and they used the Power of Experience grant to support their internship. One of the things that, you know, that I love about Knox too is the opportunity for us to, you know, get that real life experience. Sometimes we talk about these theoretical things in class, and the opportunity to really get hands-on experience to explore, you know, whatever idea that I think is interesting or whatever topic that I think I would love to learn more about, the opportunity to really explore those ideas and those topics of interest, it's really very fascinating. And, you know, that's what Power of Experience is for, just for us to go beyond the theoretical concepts and the theoretical things that we talk about in class, but actually go into the real world, go into the laboratory or go have a research experience and really learn those things. Maybe some of the things that we thought in class, yeah, at the time that we're, you know, making conclusions, maybe we were wrong, you know, just for us to really get that experience and combine the theory plus the practice and really get a feel for what it looks like. And that's what, you know, just, and you don't have to worry about the money in the process. And so that's, you know, that's one of the things why I love about Power of Experience and other funding opportunities that are available for us to pursue whatever research project or internship that we're interested in.
Excellent. Thank
you. This is Mike Schneider. I'll just add a little bit to that, which I think Bamashe has spoken to why we value this so highly. And experiential learning, we call it immersion and active learning these days at Knox, but it is a graduation requirement. I would say the simple distinction really is that the experiential learning is a value of the educational program, and it's something we try to do not just once, but at many times during the 4 years at Knox. Power of Experience is a tool in the sense that that grant allows students to pick their own educational experiences, immersive experiences. It could be research. It can be one student set up a basketball camp for his own neighborhood where he grew up so that there was an opportunity there. Involved a great deal of organization. It involved a great deal of planning. It involved sort of setting up an educational program. That kind of hands-on experience is a value that we want to encourage in our students, and we try to do that at many different ways at many different times. And the Power of Experience grant is there to ensure every single student has the financial resources to do that. But thank you for that question.
I'd like to go ahead and go to our second poll of the evening. The second poll has to do with kind of where Knox fits at this point in your student's choice set. So I'm interested to know if Knox is your student's top choice. Could you please press 1? If Knox is among the top 2 choices, press 2. If Knox is among the top 3, press 3. And if Knox is among the top 4 or more choices, press 4. So top choice 1, top 2, press 2. Top 3, press 3. And 4 or more, press 4. And we'll have the results of that poll shortly. The next question is from Amy, who has questions about housing options and how students in their first year choose housing. Amy?
Yeah, hi. We're calling from Massachusetts, and I just wanted to know more about how freshmen are placed in housing. Our child is transgender, and we just want to make sure there are some good options that are safe. Thanks.
This is Anne. I'd be happy to answer that. So your student will receive a housing preference form that they'll fill out. And on that form, they'll indicate their preferences in terms of would they prefer a single room? Would they prefer to have a roommate? Would they prefer to be in a single gender living situation? Would they prefer to be in a mixed gender living situation? What is their own gender identity? And then things about how loud are they? How clean are they? How amenable to visitors are they? I will say when they are filling that form out, I encourage you to let them fill it out and remind them that it is not an aspirational document. So this is an opportunity where we really want them to be honest. I've worked at 4 institutions, and one thing I love about Knox is once those forms come in, our housing director actually goes through them by hand and matches students up with their roommates. So it's not just a computer program that's going to spit out matches. So there's an opportunity for your students to put in any notes, express any concerns, if they want to have a follow-up conversation with the housing director to really make sure they get put in a place that they're comfortable. That's absolutely something that happens on a regular basis. And I'll also say that we have a not insignificant population of transgender students on campus. So this is something that we're all very accustomed to and ready to accommodate to make sure everybody feels safe and comfortable.
Okay, thank you. I do have the results for our second poll question. Where does Knox rank among your students' college options? It looks like about 27% of you, your Knox ranks as number 1 choice. For about 25% of you, it's in the top 2. About 30% is in the top 3, and about 18%, your sons and daughters are still looking at a lot of different options because they're looking at 4 or more different institutions, and Knox is among those. So that's the results of our second poll. Thank you very much for your responses. We've got time for maybe a couple more questions here tonight before the phone casts end. I'm going to go to Jen, who has questions about what differentiates Knox from other colleges. Jen?
Yeah, hi. I had sort of a two-part question. One was, as we look at a lot of small liberal arts colleges, especially as we're looking at them on Zoom calls, they start to sort of mesh together after a while. So I'm curious what you think sets Knox apart. And then secondarily, I'm just interested in what you think your students value most about the small size of the school, and also what frustrates them the most about the size of the school.
Any of one of us could probably take that question. Anybody want to jump in first?
Let me jump in. Go ahead, Mommy. You go first.
Okay, thank you. First off, something that I love so much about Knox is the diversity that it offers. When I was deciding the schools that I wanted to come to, I looked into a lot of schools, and a lot of schools, you know, kept saying, oh, we're diverse, you know. And when I got to Knox, I realized that the schools that said they were diverse, they were not diverse, because like it has been mentioned previously, there are over 50 countries represented at NARC as international students. Almost every state in the United States is represented at NARC. Now, that's in terms of the physical diversity. If we go to perspectives, political ideas, opinions, and ideologies about life, it's a different ballgame entirely. You get into conversations about students. I get challenged every day when I interact with students and we talk about, you know, concepts, you know, things going on in the world. And they challenge me to think about these issues from a different perspective. And so I really appreciate that about NARC. Personally, I wanted to go to a school where I can truly see and feel that diversity, you know, both in terms of physical representation and in terms of ideas and perspectives, for me to challenge myself and, you know, go out of my comfort zone to really ask these questions and really learn. And NARC has really given me that opportunity. So I can say for sure that NARC offers the level of diversity that NARC offers. It's a lot of other schools do not offer that level of diversity. And it speaks to, you know, the quality of education that would give us. You know, we go into the world, you know, we're critical about, you know, concepts, about ideas. We offer a diverse perspective, which is, you know, which is a huge bonus for being a liberal arts education. Then the other thing, something that is also critical or that is really that NARC holds dearly is the relationships that we're able to build. I cannot imagine going to, you know, say University of Chicago, for instance, because of the population. Every day on campus, I see people, you know, you say hi to people, you get that sense of community. You have a close relationship with your professors, you have a close relationship with staff, you know, the custodians on campus, the staff, the CAF workers, like you have these close relationships with them. Eventually, at the end of 4 years, you feel like you've known these people so much, they become a part of you. And, you know, saying goodbye can be very difficult at times. So the fact that it's a small college campus, it gives us that opportunity to build genuine relationship and build genuine bond among ourselves. And sometimes that could also be on the downside because you get to see all these people every single day. And sometimes you just get bored, like, I don't want to see you people just now. Or because of the size, sometimes you might feel like, oh, what am I going to do on campus? I mean, there's a lot to do, you know, in terms of programs, events, and all of that. And so sometimes the smallness could sometimes, you know, serve as a disadvantage. But personally, and, you know, in my interaction with a lot of students, that doesn't bother them. Because there's a lot that we get from that small class size and that small population compared to what we may think we're losing.
Great. Thank you.
So I wanted to jump in because I am the only person nearly 70 years old on this call. And I have attended or taught at or been an administrator at five different small private liberal arts colleges, all of them wonderful places. I loved every single one of them. But I have to say that the thing that makes NARC distinctive from the other schools that I have served and loved is the vibrancy of our student body. They are passionate about learning. There are not students here who are just going through the paces. They are not just waiting for some moment where they can be a college graduate and leave. They say things like, oh, I'm a physics major, but I'm minoring in dance, and I'm also in the jazz club and also the chess club, and I'm thinking maybe we should start a cricket team. It's this multidimensional enthusiasm and vibrancy, and I have not ever seen a place where you have so many students with so much enthusiasm and interest and seriousness, but enthusiasm at the same time. It's a special place. It's vibrant, and you know, sometimes college presidents don't really like vibrancy. You wish that things would calm down a little bit. But this is a very exciting place to be, even though we are in a small town and we are surrounded by farms. The town itself has a little bit of an urban feel, but it's a vibrant place. It's hopping here. Hey, Bami Shea, you didn't say what it is students don't like about the school.
Oh, I said sometimes the fact that it's a small school and it seems like there's nothing to do in Gil's world, okay. You know, you have to travel to Chicago sometimes. Yeah, I did say something along that line.
Yeah.
Well, I am cognizant of the time, and I really appreciate everyone spending time with us on this call tonight for sharing your thoughts, sharing your questions. If you did not have a chance to ask your question, or you can remain on the line at the end and leave a voicemail, and we will go ahead and follow up with you in the coming days, just as soon as possible. We'll follow up and we can talk with you directly about the questions that you might have. You can also contact your admission counselor at any point along the way, and they're happy to talk with you more and get you information that you need. We will also be sending an email with a link to a recording of tonight's phonecast that you can listen again or you can share with others in your family. As I mentioned at the outset, today marks the first event in our admitted student experience, and throughout the winter and spring, we're hosting a series of live and virtual events like this one with faculty, staff, and current students. That will include some in-person opportunities on campus. We are open on a limited basis for individual visits on campus Monday through Friday. We're also going to be starting to do a series of admitted student Saturdays. On Saturdays, starting in late February and extending through the 1st of May. So those will be opportunities. Again, those will be smaller programs due to the pandemic and maintaining social distancing. So we'll offer some on-campus events. And then we're also sponsoring three different virtual admitted student day events. And we will be doing a couple more phonecasts, one for admitted students themselves to talk with current students, another one for parents to talk with parents and current students. So if you like the phonecast, there will be another opportunity later in the spring. You can, at this point, if you want, learn more about those events that are part of the admitted student experience on our website. If you go to our website, look for the admitted student experience or knox.edu/admitted students, you'll can see a full listing of all those opportunities, and we'll continue to update that as more of the events are planned. If your son or daughter has not yet applied for admission, there's still time to do so. We're just a few days away from our January 15th regular decision application deadline, so if you haven't applied yet, you can submit the Common Application, the Coalition Application, or the Knox Application information, again, on our website at knox.edu. So as you continue and your student continues their college search, they undoubtedly have additional questions. All of us in the admission office are here to help. Call us, text us, email us, come see us, join us for another virtual event, schedule an appointment for a phone call or a virtual meeting. We do Zoom, so if you want to do a Zoom call with us, we can do that as well. But we look forward to talking more with you. We're all here to help. So best wishes for this evening. Stay safe and healthy, and good night from Knox and Galesburg.